Thank you, Dougal and others, for the invitation. I'd like to invite you to think what the research world will look like in 5 or 10 years' time. And I think if you project ahead, it will contain some or all of the following features: that the increasingly tired distinction between pure and applied will have exhausted itself. Second, that knowledge, research, science will be produced between organisations and not within them. And those organisations will include not just universities, but also other bodies within the public and private sector with research functions. Increasingly, research will be funded from multi-agency points of view, and both that and the point about institutions have an important international dimension. And finally, increasingly knowledge will be produced at the boundaries of disciplines and in the interactions between disciplines, particularly as it addresses large-scale sorts of problems. Now, if one takes that as a map in some respects of the future, then it sets a number of challenges for funders. There is the need to stimulate the translation of research, but not to do so to such an extent that you exhaust the productivity of what, in Paul's happy phrase, he's called discovery research. There is the challenge of globalization and the tightrope to be walked there between collaboration and competition amongst emerging research powers. There is also the same rhythm between concentration and collaboration in the way we use domestic facilities and the way we interact between different sorts of institutions to produce both efficiency and further opportunity. And there is the dividend to be gained from the pooling of intellectual expertise and talent and energy across the variety of disciplines. And it's that which I primarily want to talk about today. Now, I'm not a scientist, as you will have realised from the description earlier on, but I have done quite a lot of work in the history of science, and I do work with a clinical neurologist colleague on trying to understand what happens in the brain when people read complicated texts like poems. So although I'm not a scientist, I am on nodding acquaintance with the protocols and needs of science, and I hope that gives some degree of support to what's going to follow in these reflections. I think interdisciplinarity is easy to say and extremely hard to do. I'd like to draw a distinction between casual or soft interdisciplinarity, which is the pretense that by being a humanist, you read a couple of books of popular science, or if you're a scientist, a few poems, and you can somehow be relaxed and comfortable in those wider environments. There's a distinction between that soft or casual interdisciplinarity and a harder-edged version of it, which is much more demanding and much more valuable. What's constitutive, I think, of genuine path-breaking interdisciplinarity is that it is not the habits of hard reading, but the ability to constitute a different object of knowledge than that which exists within your current specialism. Your current specialism is essential, but the new kind of object of knowledge will be constituted by its multi-aspected nature and its stretched and stretching demands upon your time and your intelligence. It involves challenges at very fundamental levels, very basic sorts of levels, in ways of working and in the pace of research, which is very different across different disciplines, in method, in definitions of task and ambition, in the protocols by which evidence is gathered and used, in the legitimacy of inference and conclusion, and of course, eventually, in the forms of publication. My colleague and I have found some difficulty in publishing our work on this brain stuff because for one journal we're too arty, for another we're too sciencey, and that is quite a major problem for us. It requires a great deal of front-end loading in brokerage, fundamental understanding, an open-minded discussion of very basic sorts of concepts of the kind that I've indicated. And if you want a bit of evidence around this, reflect back on Framework Programme 5, EU Framework Programme 5, some years ago, which prioritised interdisciplinary work, and almost all of those projects tanked. And they set up a series of investigations to discuss why they failed, and the reason was primarily two: absentee PIs and directors, and the second is an underinvestment in fundamental brokerage of the kind that I've been trying to describe. All of this is also in some degree of tension with the institutional structures in which research is undertaken within UK HEIs, and as far as I'm aware, many of those abroad as well. The constitution of universities in discipline-based departments or faculties, the career structures which are articulated around specialist skills and develop, the training of early career researchers and postgraduates, and the natures, indeed, very fundamentally, of buildings and budgets and funding structures. All of those prioritise specialist rather than a more open-ended kind of research. And one of the things I find exciting about Paul Nursey's description of the Crick Institute, which I've read, is a fundamental attention to the mental as well as the physical architecture of the place and how those sorts of things enable different kinds of interactions. So I share Paul's vision of a new enlightenment and of the values of openness of inquiry, of rational inquiry, of empiricism, of respect for evidence and conclusion, and of the creative challenges posed by natural environments. But I do think we've yet to have a mature conversation about the ways in which interdisciplinary work might be facilitated and encouraged. And that is around not just funding, it is about those fundamentals which I've just described. Paul likes to refer back to the Lunar Society of the late 18th and early 19th century. It's worth reminding ourselves that the Lunar Society was unusual in the quality of what it produced, not in the nature of the enterprise. Such endeavours populated the entire country throughout the Victorian period, which is my own specialism, and you can see the remnants of those things in literature and philosophical societies, in libraries, often in industrial communities like Manchester and Newcastle. How do you derive the lessons from those things? They are the very fundamental principles of open inquiry, meeting of different forms of expertise, a willingness to engage and communicate across wider spectrums, and the genuine passion and excitement of fresh and new discovery. So, thank you.